Hi, Odyssey fans. I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
And I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse magazine. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
A few podcasts ago, we heard from Leilani Barrett, voice of Thomas Dorsey in Precious Lord. He recorded that whole episode during a long day back in July of last year.
On today's podcast, we're talking about everything that happened in the year after that recording. The crowds, the singing, the sound effects, the music, and the production that came together to create this episode.
God took the real Thomas Dorsey on quite the journey, and the production of these episodes felt almost as epic.
Let's hear from longtime sound designer Nathan Jones, as well as Jamal Sarikoki, the voice of Pastor Nix. Nate and Jamal, it's great to have you guys in the studio today.
Thanks for having us.
You know, Nate, let's start with you, because I know an average episode takes about 4 to 6 weeks to complete, but yet this one took longer. Why is that?
Well, it's math.
Well, true.
Because this one's a two-parter. So it's going to take twice as long to do, but this one has a unique sort of time in history attached to it, where there's a flip here that happens at this particular time period. Things like the car was invented when Thomas Dorsey was a little boy.
Okay.
But they still had horses and wagons running up and down the street. So it was right in the edge. And there's a particular scene that if you listen, when the father is talking to the sheriff, who's talking about the rent coming up in arrears, I think he says, if you listen outside, you'll hear something that sounds like an old West town. And then just, you know, a little bit of time later, we listen outside in the city and you'll hear a mixture of cars and horses. So,
oh, cool.
Those are some of the, you know, some of the things we have to watch out for.
You know, as is the case for a majority of our episodes, John Campbell composed the music. But, Nate, you used a real piano to enhance John's sound. How exactly did that work?
Well, as you know, today's samples and, you know, in music software, you know, a lot of people use Logic Pro and a lot of different piano samples. There's a lot of great stuff. All of the things that you hear in between notes, those things are not really covered by samples. I'm sure, Jamal, you know that too. I mean, so what I had to do was kind of listen to what John had given me, and it's great, beautiful stuff, and the samples sound great. But I thought, you know, in order to bring more realism into it, we've got to hear those pedals. So we have a piano here at Focus, and I went up there one day after hours and just recorded the way that the dampeners fall, the way sustain pedal hits.
Nice.
Just put that wood and that metal and those creaks and all that kind of stuff into the piano so that you, you know, even though you may hear a sample, we don't think it's a sampled piano, but then when we hear the real stuff added on top of it, our brain just kind of goes ahead and accepts it.
Yeah. So, oh, that's great. You didn't have John create the music for a scene where Thomas messes up. It was in front of President Calvin Coolidge. Why not? And how did you get that sound?
Well, it's a funny thing about psychology, because Jamal here, he's a great, fantastic singer and a fantastic piano player as well. And if I went to him and I said, okay, so Jamal, I need you to make the sound of somebody playing the piano but messing up. Okay. So how long have you been playing?
Just about 20 years.
It would be hard to unthink that 20 years of training.
Definitely.
Yeah. But when you go to somebody who's trained on an instrument like John, or even myself, I've been playing guitar for 36 some odd years, you know. And if you came to me and you said, you know what? Can you make it sound like somebody's messing up? I can't. Mm. I've spent 36 years honing my craft as to not mess up. And so to sit down and think about what it takes to have fumbling fingers on a guitar, it's hard for me to reverse engineer that and make that happen. So I thought, well, what better way to have somebody sound like they can't play the piano than for me to go sit behind the piano, right?
Yeah,
great. And that's what I did. And so when Thomas Dorsey has his, I guess it's not a stage fright. He just has this freezing where he obviously can't perform. And I just thought, you know what? I can't perform either. So I just beedly dong de ding dong on the piano.
So that's Nate.
Yeah. So I know enough about rhythm to give it a swing. So I gave it a dong dong kind of a thing. But hey, all the notes are bad.
And you had Louis Armstrong right there to give you a hard time about it.
Oh, it was great.
Well, Jamal, let's hear more from you because you sang the character of Nyx, but outside the world of Odyssey, you're actually a worship leader at First Presbyterian Church here in Colorado Springs. And much like Thomas Dorsey, you had a journey that the Lord took you on. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So, born and raised in Chicago, in the home, what I like to call the hometown of Thomas Dorsey.
Yeah.
And my mom put me in conservatory when I was about 4 years old. And so I've been studying music and have been performing music all my life. But it was really my grandmother who passed down her Christian faith to me. And if it wasn't for her, I definitely don't know that I would have ever thought or comprehended wanting to put my career in church music.
Hmm. Most of us have watched worship leaders on stage. We have no experience up there ourselves. Do you have a piece of advice for anyone who might be, you know, just inspired to lead worship at church, kids or otherwise?
Yeah, I've got two pieces of advice. The first is take some lessons. And I don't mean you have to go to conservatory or whatever. But if you even see someone up there leading worship, just talk to them. Talk about what you're feeling. You might have these talents or giftings. And just learn from them. And the second piece of advice, which I think is probably the most important piece of advice, is to become a student of the scriptures. If you yourself aren't a student of the scriptures, then worship leading, preaching, whatever it is probably not for you.
So for somebody who is, let's say they are going to take that advice and go take lessons and all of that, you know, sometimes that the first month is exciting. Mm-hmm. Second month is exciting. Third starts to dwindle.
Oh, yeah.
You get into that first and second year.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel like you wanted to quit? And how did you get through it if you did?
Yeah. So part of that for me was piano and voice were not my primary instruments. So when I started in conservatory, I started as a violinist and violist and spent pretty much even my high school collegiate years competing nationally. And I wanted to quit so much. And part of it was my mom was like, I already spent this money on it, so you're going to do it regardless. But two, actually, was just surrounding myself with mature musicians, but also peers who were good influences on me and just kind of continue to say, push through it. It's meant to be hard. If there's something you want to do in life, it's meant to be difficult. If you want to be an astrophysicist or go into space and be an astronaut, it's meant to be difficult. And I think it's through those difficult seasons and through the difficult training that the Lord uses you even more.
Yeah, if it's not hard, everybody be doing it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Sounds like his plan wasn't for you to be a violinist, although if we do an Odyssey show, we got to have you come back and play in that for sure.
So, Jamal, I need somebody.
There'd be a lot of editing going on.
I need somebody who can't quite play the violin. Is that something
that's
you can
me. That's me.
That's you. Come on. Well, you are an amazing singer, so
oh,
I got to ask,
you.
How did you prepare to sing I Do, Don't You in the studio? And were you familiar with that song beforehand?
So that was actually the first time I'd ever heard that song. Just hearing it took me back to, growing up. I grew up in a very old school Black Baptist church. And so that song was very much part of the, or that type of music was very much a part of my upbringing. So I kind of went on YouTube and just to be honest, listen to a bunch of old Black men sing gospel music. And that's kind of what put me in the kind of, you know, mindset to be able to sing that. So,
well, let's go into the studio and talk about your experience there. What did you do to kind of get into the character of Reverend Nyx? Because obviously it wasn't just singing a song. It was singing with a certain attitude and presence. And, you know, we have actors who talk about reliving a memory to feel mm-hmm. the right emotion. Did you do that?
Well, I think two things. What first helped was Nate playing that scene for me. So I got to hear kind of the church scene and what was going on. So automatically that just kind of put me in the mindset of, okay, let's think of these kind of old school black preachers, how they preach, you know, how they get excited, the drama, the passion they have. And then growing up in a church where preaching was like that, and the pastor would always transition into singing some song at the end of his sermon, that kind of helped me. I mean, I am probably one of the weirdest Christian people out there. If you were to look at my church tradition over the 32 years of my life, it's kind of as if someone was a military kid, like, you know, going from different place. I mean, grew up in a Black Baptist church and then went to a Dutch Christian Reformed church and then went to a Presbyterian church and Lutheran church and a Pentecostal church, like having all these different experiences of like, how do I be me, but also be relevant to probably what Thomas Dorsey was experiencing in church at that time. So, yeah.
Well, this episode is about a real person who faced great struggles and reached the end of his rope, which, Nate, may have felt like a metaphor for the production at times. You ran into a number of unusual challenges. Specifically, why was recording the song Precious Lord, Take My Hand difficult?
Oh, well, this is one where you have an actor who is the voice of Thomas Dorsey throughout the show, right? Mm-hmm. And so we get used to the way that he sounds. And to have somebody who doesn't sound like that start singing for Thomas Dorsey, you run the risk of having a real, you know, just a real head shake, because you're like, whoa, you know, it doesn't
dissonance
quite fit
there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not going to work. So you've I know it was a godsend that I was able to get Ray, because I had originally called Ray to do the next part. I had heard he was an audition, or we had something that came in, and I thought, okay, well, there's him singing. This could possibly work. He sounds like he could do an older distinguished gentleman. And I thought, okay, so I'll play with this. So I got on the phone. I talked to him. I was like, Ray, you know, and hey, okay, Nate. And I'm like, and I just pumped the brakes. I'm like, you know, I may be shooting myself in the foot here, Ray, but you sound a lot like the Thomas Dorsey character. But with Ray, it sounded like it would work. So I had him come in and do a test. And this also goes into how long it took us to actually get the show finished, because Ray was my man. I needed him to sing as Thomas Dorsey. But then Ray went through so many personal things. He had to travel to Texas for some family emergencies, and he had some things happen to him, and, you know, with like catching the flu, and there were just all these things that were constantly showing up as like not major roadblocks, but blocks enough to slow down the production. And again, it was like, okay, well, is that no surprise? Think of the content that we're doing here. Anything that you want to do is going to be difficult, right, Jamal? Anything worth doing is going to be, you know, difficult. So we had to wait, and Ray went through the things he had to go through, and we finally got him in and got it finished, but it did take longer to get the show done. And I remember sitting with Ray in the studio, and by the time he came to sing, he was able to tap into all the things that he had gone through over the last 2 or 3 months of trying to get him in. And when he came in to sing, he was able to bring that out in the performance to where, you know, he actually had the emotion that Thomas Dorsey would have had to a degree. I mean, you know, Ray didn't lose his son and his wife and all that kind of stuff, but he was able to kind of tap into all of this hard stuff. And we had this conversation afterwards, and I said, so you see, Ray, all that stuff that you've gone through, you know, it's kind of mirrors into the show as well. And Ray, he's just like, you know, we're sitting in our studio and he's like, oh, so this is all your fault. I'm like, yeah, I guess so. But hey, you know, it's a story that needed to be told, and it didn't need to be rushed, and it certainly didn't need any compromises on who we got to sing, both with Jamal and Ray.
Oh, yeah. And that moment that Thomas receives the divine inspiration and is a turning point in his life is such a powerful scene and so critical in the show. So, Nate, how did you approach this milestone from a production standpoint? Because it was such a poignant moment.
Well, this is where some of the creative license comes in. people are people, and we've always been people forever. That hasn't changed. And we've always been in our situation. And we have supernatural things from God, moments of clarity or inspiration or some sort of word that God wants to give to you, whether it's audible or through situational, or it just comes in like knowledge. I mean, they're just, we have these experiences. And when you're doing a show that is, you know, that is an audio drama, you have to portray that moment in a particular way. So if you listen closely to this scene, what I tried to do was, you know, it's a little Easter egg maybe for everybody. But when I have an inspiration for a song, it's almost like I feel like it's my job to translate what God has given me. Okay? So if you listen to the moment with Thomas Dorsey, having that, I made the surroundings kind of fade off into the background. And I put this little hint of this music kind of floating around in the ether where he's at. And I did that on purpose because you can't quite make out the tune, but you can make out where it kind of needs to go.
Mm.
And when you get inspired to do a song, it's very much like that. It's, I'm hearing this thing. I can't exactly put my finger on it, but it's my responsibility to go dig this thing out. And that's what I tried to portray in that moment with Thomas Dorsey.
That's really interesting. And of course, Jesse and I being writers and editors, I think we can connect with that too, because when you're writing a concept or you're playing with words, it can be very similar to what you just described. That's great. You know, Jamal, I understand that you have a personal connection to Thomas Dorsey through your grandmother. We've got to hear that story.
So the first time I ever heard a Thomas Dorsey song, my grandmother had this little tiny Hammond B3 organ in her living room, and she used to just sit there, and she just had this whole book of spirituals and songs, and so she used to sit there just singing "Precious Lord, Take My Hand," and you know, on this end of my life, kind of seeing what my grandmother went through, my grandfather was harsh, and so my grandmother, with five girls all under 8 years old, moved them out of the house, and she raised five girls, put all five girls through college and grad school by herself. And so she needed an outlet raising these kids by herself, and so choir singing was her outlet. You know, I still remember her telling me the story of being in a music class at Moody Bible the day that Dr. King got assassinated. But she would tell me all about her stories, singing in choirs and stuff when the girls were young and when she was growing up. And she's like, you know, there was one time there was a gospel revival happening and people got to join this choir and do some rehearsals and stuff like that. And she's like, I just went, and I got there, and Thomas Dorsey's leading the choir. And she's like, that was the best experience of choir singing I'd ever had in my life. And those moments for my grandmother, you know, hearing about that even until she died and hearing that story of singing in this choir with Thomas Dorsey and her eyes just lighting up. It's just like, man, that was a pivotal moment for her in her life and something that she never forgot. And I think it's because not just her love for music, but her love for music that is in nature worship of God. She just instilled that in me without instilling it within, you know, like just how she lived her life, singing songs, watching her, you know, when she would sit in the living room at the organ, just singing these songs, you could just tell all these memories were playing in her head at that moment. And so it's like, for me, when I sit at the piano and play "Precious Lord, Take My Hand" or "Sweet, Sweet Spirit," I've never done it. In the last 5 years, I've never been able to do without just having tears streaming down my face, because here my grandmother was singing these spirituals in its true essence. So,
you stop to think that maybe your grandmother and Thomas Dorsey are singing in the same choir right
now.
That's
so true.
Yeah. Well, Jamal and Nate, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great hearing the angle on the music that you've been working on together. And we just love the opportunity for club members to be able to hear Precious Lord Parts 1 and 2. It's a wonderful program, and we really appreciate your contribution to it.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
You can hear the complete story, Precious Lord Parts 1 and 2, in the club right now.
And don't forget that you can still explore the special wallpapers on youngwit.com to discover a message from John Avery Whittaker himself. The first letter you'll need is I.
And while you're on the website, be sure to vote in this year's Avery Awards. Polls close soon.
But that's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation to Focus on the Family.
Our website is adventuresinodyssey.com, or if you want to talk to someone in person, you can call 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day is an adventure.
Adventures in Odyssey has taken generations of children on an exciting journey, all the while sharing biblical principles and activating their imaginations. Now, in 2024, we'll be airing our 1,000th episode. To celebrate, we're inviting every member of the Odyssey family to join us for one grand party. This spectacular two-day event is packed with fun and excitement for Adventures in Odyssey fans of every age. Partygoers will enjoy an unmatched immersive experience into the town of Odyssey. Meet and greets with cast and crew, Q&A sessions, trivia contests, and more. The party is topped off with a live episode recording starring fan favorite characters. It's all happening on August 2nd and 3rd in beautiful Colorado Springs, Colorado. Tickets for One Grand Party are going fast. Learn more at onegrandparty.com.